In reflecting on the methods of self-improvement that one can pursue in this life, one way of classifying the various paths is by dividing the approaches into four major categories: body, mind, spirit, and shadow. As I list some examples drawn from a book called Integral Life Practice, I invite you to consider where your own proclivities lie and what might be areas that you might feel drawn or benefit from stretching into, as well as how your proclivities toward one or more of these categories may have shifted over time. For myself, if left to my own devices, I'm drawn most naturally to practices around the mind. Reading and study, discussion and debate, writing and journaling, pursuing far too many degrees. Additionally, my childhood experience of being raised in a conservative Christian tradition helped cultivate my appreciation for practices related to spirit: meditation, prayer, spiritual community, worship, song, and chant. Also, the more educated I became, the more exposure I had to what are sometimes called shadow practices, following the psychologist Carl Jung's term for the unconscious, those things that are repressed or that we're unaware of, that are very much part of ourself. Things like dream work, working with your dreams, journaling, psychotherapy, art, music, and dance. There are other potential subdivisions you could consider beyond these four, you know, ethics or vocation, working on relationships, or focusing on your creativity. But turning to our theme for this morning of embodied spirituality, the fourth major category of body includes strength training, aerobic exercise, balanced diet, yoga, martial arts, sports, and dance. And as I pressed to higher and higher levels of the mind, or tried to, earning a doctoral degree, writing a dissertation, working on publishing a book, writing sermons and blog posts, one thing I've found is that as I've gone higher and higher in that area, there's a risk of toppling over and burning out if I don't work on some of those other areas to balance out. That I've had to become increasingly intentional about carving out time for body, for spirit, and for shadow practices. And as you reflect on where you find yourself in this particular season of your life, I invite you to consider what set of practices might be most helpful for you during this time. Body, mind, spirit, shadow, or some combination thereof. What might help you in amplifying and energizing your life and becoming more balanced? I should add as well that many spiritual teachers make an important distinction between what is called the gross body and what is called sometimes called the subtle body. Now, that's not gross body as in, ooh, disgusting, right? That's gross as in gross anatomy. Some of you may have heard of that course. So gross anatomy is studying the structure of organs and tissues that are visible to the naked eye. So according to many spiritual traditions, there is, of course, a gross body that is visible to the naked eye: flesh and bones, organs and cells, saliva and blood. But there also is, according to some spiritual traditions, a more subtle body of various kinds of energy. You may have heard this referred to as chi or prana, which are related to the chakras or the acupuncture meridians. We can just as we can strengthen our gross body through practices like weightlifting, running, aerobics, sports, and dance, we can also become more aware of our subtle body through practices such as yoga, tai chi, qigong, breath practice, which you experienced a little of earlier, visualization, and even lucid dreaming. You've already heard some powerful testimony this morning from Irene about the transformative power that she's experienced of subtle body practices such as yoga. And I know there are many members of this congregation who have had significant experiences through Tai Chi, through Reiki, and other related practices. To share with you some of my experience, periodically over the past decade and more, I've benefited from doing quite a bit of yoga, though nothing compared to the amount of yoga that Irene has done and continues to do, as well as some qigong that I've benefited from both of that. To focus in particular on yoga, part of what I appreciate, as Irene described well, is that yoga gets me out of my head and into my body, both my gross body as well as my subtle body, paying attention to how energy is moving through my body. It's also a great counterbalance to, I really enjoy running, and yoga is a great counterbalance to help keep my running kind of shortens your muscles, and yoga stretches it back out, increases flexibility, helps decrease the risk for injury. That's another reason I appreciate it. And given my bent, though, toward mind-related practices, even as I was going deeper into some body-related practices like working out and running and yoga, I couldn't help myself from also studying yoga and studying what had been written about it and researching the yogic tradition. And one of the most interesting books I found really period, but also fairly recently in the last few years, is called The Science of Yoga: The Risks and Rewards. It was published a few years ago by the New York Times journalist William Broad, who has been a yoga practitioner for more than four decades, as well as winning the Pulitzer Prize and an Emmy and other things. I discovered his yoga book through three related articles some of you may remember from a few years ago in the Times. One was called How Yoga Can Wreck Your Body. One was called Wounded Warrior Pose: The Perils of Yoga for Men. And the third was called Women's Flexibility is a Liability in Yoga. Now, don't get me wrong from those headlines, which I almost guarantee he did not write, right? Some editor wrote a catchy headline. He, as well as myself, are actually big fans of yoga. The central lesson from both those three articles, as well as from his book, is to proceed slowly and with caution. Part of embodied spirituality is being aware of both the promises of what our body can teach us and all that our bodies are capable of, but also being aware of our body's limitations. My biggest takeaway from the book is that I actually no longer have any aspirations of being able to fully contort my body into some of the most extreme poses that I remember seeing when, like, I first started doing like Ashtanga back in the early 2000s and just being like, that's incredible that they can do that. I'm not sure that I even want to try. Actually, I am sure that I don't want to try. Instead, I'm content with the many benefits and the much less risk of more intermediate or very lower level advanced classes. In particular, I recommend Broad's Chapter 4 on the Risk of Injury, where he writes that yogis are well advised to be particularly protective of their backs and their necks. That tends to be where the injuries particularly happen. Another major insight I had from reading The Science of Yoga that I hadn't previously considered is that although yoga is wonderful in many ways, don't kid yourself that you're getting your cardio exercise from yoga. He writes that scientists have concluded that a yoga session fails to meet minimum requirements for aerobic recommendations of the world's health bodies. Now, some of the ways Irene will lead you through a yoga class are different than that, but a traditional yoga class, yes, I can testify to that, but of a traditional yoga class, its oxygen demands on your body represent low levels of physical activity, similar to walking on a treadmill at a slow pace or taking a leisurely stroll. Decades of uncertainty ended in a consensus that emerged that yoga did much for the body and mind, but little or nothing for aerobic conditioning. You know, it's sort of lowering your heartbeat, actually, not raising it. And that's a good thing, too, often. But he writes, yoga also equaled or surpassed exercise in such things as improving balance, reducing fatigue, decreasing anxiety, cutting stress, lifting moods, improving sleep, reducing pain, lowering cholesterol, and more generally in raising the quality of life for yogis, both socially and on the job. So do yoga. It does tons of great things for you. Just do cardio, too. Now, yoga may or may not be right for you, although there's a wide, increasingly wide variety of yoga classes that are really for all body types. I mean, you sort of just experienced that Irene just led you through some yoga that's actually appropriate for any body type and any fitness level. Most importantly, I encourage you in the coming days and weeks to spend some time reflecting, going back to the list I gave you earlier on, what practices might be right for you in this season of your life related to your body, to your mind, to your spirit, to your shadow. And as we move toward our conclusion, I should add that one of the most common themes related to embodied spirituality that I've read sort of across the world's religious traditions is the invitation to befriend your body. Some of you may already be friends with your body. But what would that look like for you? How differently might you relate to your body if you thought about what would it look like to befriend your body? Not to make it your enemy, right? Not to make it your frenemy, but to make it your, to actually treat your body like a good friend. And just as cultivating a good friendship requires time, attention, and care, so too befriending your body requires time, paying attention to your body, care for your body. Indeed, the spiritual writer Barbara Brown Taylor goes so far as to say that it is vitally important for your spiritual health to drop your clothes, look in the mirror, and say, "Here I am. This is the body like no other that my life has shaped. I live here, and this is my soul's address." At the same time, just as friends can betray us, so too we, as we journey through this life, many of us have had experiences of feeling like our bodies have betrayed us. There's a lot more to say about that, but I'll say briefly, even in such a time, practitioners of embodied spirituality will challenge us to listen. Even during those times when you feel like your body is betraying you, to listen even in those times, to listen more closely to your body for the wisdom your body might have to share with you, even in times of illness and brokenness, about how you might move forward with integrity. In that spirit, I'd like to invite you to experiment this morning with listening to your body through a practice known as a body scan. Now, body scan practices frequently take about 10 minutes or at least 5 minutes. I'm going to do a shorter version of it with you this morning. And you can take sort of as long or short as feels right to you. But for this morning, I'll lead you through an adaptation of a brief body scan. It's actually a 3-minute one that may even be briefer this morning. But it was developed by Dr. Alicia Goldstein, who's a good person to read in this area. He's a psychologist who has extensively integrated mindfulness into his practice of psychology. So if you're comfortable doing so, I invite you to close your eyes and kind of put both feet flat on the floor. Sit relaxed but alert, and take a deep breath in and out. Use this breath as an anchor to ground yourself in the now of this present moment. Now bringing awareness to the feet, noticing sensations in the soles of the feet, the toes, the top of the feet, and up into the ankle joints. Bringing a sense of curiosity to this practice, as if you've never noticed these sensations before. Shifting awareness up from the feet and the ankles to the legs. Shifting up from these to the hips. Shifting up from there to the torso. Being aware of the back region, the chest, the abdomen. And being aware of your arms, hands, choosing to shift attention to these areas. Now, in this space of awareness, choosing to bring attention from the torso to the shoulders in particular. The shoulders are often a place of tension and stress, so just being aware of what's here. And up from there to the neck, and from the neck to the face, noticing sensations in the entirety of the face. and continuing breathing in and out, release any awareness of the head and face, the torso and arms, the hips and legs and feet, and just coming back to the breath. And as we come to the end of this practice, acknowledge the experience of taking this time out to connect with your body, the only one you have. We've got a few more minutes, so I'm going to tell you a little more, right? So how many of you in the past week have heard on the news or otherwise about Ta-Nehisi Coates' new book? So it's getting a lot of press. I mean, I think everyone's surprised, including Coates. It is Ta-Nehisi. It looks like the H-I is actually pronounced Ha, like H-A-H. So the book is called Between the World and Me. I first started following Coates about a year ago. If you haven't seen his article in The Atlantic on reparations, it's astounding and an incredible, worthwhile read. And so I've been interested for a while to see what else he would come out with. And this book was actually supposed to come out in a few months in the fall, which is when a lot of major books get published. But it got moved up because its content is so particularly relevant to the situation in our country after the attacks in Charleston and after the lowering of the Confederate flag. It's quite a brief book. It's only about 150 pages. And it's called Between the World and Me, which is, I think, a poem by Richard Wright, the late African-American poet. But it's, I think, relevant as well to this idea of embodied spirituality of, I was raised, again, as a conservative Christian, and a lot of times the emphasis was on the next world, but I started sort of calling BS on that when I sort of would press people on it and be like, well, if you really think that you have maybe a maximum of 120 years on this planet and then eternity in heaven on streets of gold or whatever, why aren't you giving away all of your money and following Jesus, right, and serving the poor? And no one in my congregation had a good answer to this question. There are, of course, Christians who do, don't get me wrong, but by and large, the majority of Christians, and certainly those in my 800-member Southern Baptist Big Steeple Church in South Carolina, did not do that, and that seemed very, well, it's cognitive dissonance. I did not know that word at that point. Ta-Nehisi Coates, this Between the World and Me, so he was raised as an atheist and is an atheist. So he had a very interesting perspective after Charleston because he just said very flatly, he's like, I guess that's good for the families in Charleston who were able to forgive so quickly, but he's like, I wouldn't be able to. He's like, I'm not a Christian. That's not part of my tradition. He's like, I grew up reading Malcolm X, Between the Bullet and the Ballot Box. You know, so he comes from, he's a very interesting commentator, and I wanted to share it with you for a number of reasons. I would recommend that you read it. It's only, again, only 150 pages. You can see it's quite a short book. He didn't know Toni Morrison before this. I don't know if they maybe met briefly since then, but they both went to Howard, Historically Black University, and he told his publisher, he said, the only person I want to have a blurb on my book is Toni Morrison, if she'll do it. And knowing her sort of tradition and what she's done for the African-American literary tradition. So he sent it to her, and it's a hell of a quote. I'll read it to you. She wrote, I've been wondering who might fill the intellectual void that plagued me after James Baldwin died. He died in 87, as some of you may remember. If you don't know who James Baldwin is, I will share one brief anecdote. He's been asked a lot recently, so what do you think? Your book just came out. It's kind of competing with Harper Lee's new book, right? He's like, I haven't read that. I haven't even read To Kill a Mockingbird, to which everyone's been saying, what? You haven't read To Kill a Mockingbird? And he's like, well, have you read James Baldwin? You know, it's kind of like, he's like, black people and white people read different books, you know? He's like, I didn't need to read To Kill a Mockingbird, you know? So Toni Morrison said, I've been wondering who might fill the intellectual void that plagued me after James Baldwin died. Clearly, it is Ta-Nehisi Coates. The language of Between the World and Me, like Coates' journey, is visceral, eloquent, and beautifully redemptive. And it's an examination of the hazards and hopes of black male life is as profound as it is revelatory. This is required reading. And so I mentioned earlier about the this worldly embodied spirituality. A lot of what this book is about is how our society treats black bodies. And it's very much worth reading. And that would be unjustly. The back cover as well, I also wanted to share, this is a lot more subtle. You probably can't even see it. There's a kind of an imprint on the back, and it's actually an anti-slavery bill from the mid-19th century, and it says, caution, it's maybe the most famous anti-slavery bill. It came out after the Fugitive Slave Law, basically, which allowed the powers that be in the North to ship slaves that had escaped into the North back down south. So this is a anti-slavery bill. You know, it says, caution colored people of Boston. You know, basically, beware of the police and the authorities that be, because you cannot trust them anymore, because they will potentially send you back, even if you aren't a fugitive slave. So the interesting part that I learned from one of my friends who's a UU historian is that this anti-slavery bill was written by the UU minister and radical abolitionist Theodore Parker. So it's perhaps even more relevant than Coates intended it to be, or he may not have anything to do with it, but that's just another interesting UU connection to this book, so I highly commend it to you. So as you go from this place, continue your journey walking in love. Care for one another and care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And as you go, whatever taste or touch you've had in this time and place of hope, of love, of peace or joy, that goes with you out into the world. So live boldly and with thanksgiving. Go in peace.